Accession number 21024, Reel 3.
Doug Lakey, Reel 3.
And these shells all fell in the fields just behind us. And I was on the radio, and I said to our commander, what bloody fool is firing those medium regiment, those medium shells behind us? And they said, oh, it's your brother down the road. But they corrected it very quickly, and they did a good job of shelling the attacking German force. And the actual village of Malta was taken about a month afterwards. And in the report that was made of the battle that day, they said the streets were absolutely lined with dead Hampshire and German bodies that had been killed in that attack that day. They were one of the worst scenes of the war, actually.
Were you in the occupation of Germany?
I was.
Any memories of that?
Yes, we went to a village called Walsrode, which is about 30 miles from Hanover, and we were really there to sort of give some control to the local people, because they were being harassed by marauding Poles and displaced Russians and such like. They would go out and rob the farms at night, and they didn't think twice about killing German people. And there were a number of these going on all the time. And we were sent in parties to, we would sleep on these farms. Perhaps four or five of us would go out and sleep on the farm, which was very welcomed by the farmer himself to know that we were there. And we would, when these marauders came in, they met a hail of a fire and quickly retreated. But while we were there, we did a number of big raids on displaced persons camps, cutting out some of these people with all the loot they'd stolen from. You couldn't blame them, because they'd been at the hands of German looters throughout the war. But I well remember going to one camp, and they were all in Nissen huts, Nissen type huts. And we made them all stand at their beds. They had their wives, and they were all naked. They didn't have any night clothes to wear, and they stood by their beds. And we were searching, and under their beds they had baths and buckets and everything. And were filled with half cows and pigs and chicken. But we didn't confiscate anything from them. We just... We didn't find anybody that we were really looking for, and that was the end of the story. But you could realize what they'd put up with over the time, and that they were getting their revenge, but we were there just to stop them if we could.
How did the displaced persons react to your defending the Germans?
Well, they expected it, I think. And we were never on bad terms with displaced people, because we were doing such a lot for them. We were issuing them with food and all sorts of things, and we were commandeering German buildings and that to house them and such like. When we were in Walsrode, we had the Fallingbostel prison. I think it was, I forget the number of the lager it was, but it housed all British prisoners. A lot of them that had been captured at Arnhem were there. And they were all released, and the camp was taken over, and it was SS women, and they were huge women, they were, and they were real bad eggs. And we had corridors up through the cages, as we called them. It was all barbed wire and netting, and they would spit at you, and I said they could hit you at 50 yards, some of these women. But we went there. They were there for many weeks, all these women, and then they were moved off somewhere else. And we had other German prisoners there. And we used a lot of these German prisoners for doing fatigues in our barracks. We would go over there and collect a dozen of them and bring them over for the day to cleaning and such like, and we'd treat them well, and they loved coming.
What had these SS women been doing at Fallingbostel?
Well, they'd been captured in different places, these SS women, and they were all sent to Fallingbostel to be assessed. I think what they did with them in the end, I don't know, but they were really vicious.
So you spent the whole of the Germany occupation in that area?
No, I stayed there until the regiment was disbanded. Our regiment was disbanded, and I stayed behind and cleared up all the kits and disposed of everything there. I had to go back to different HQs. And then I was posted to the Desert Rats, who were up in Schleswig-Holstein at a place called Elmshorn. And I spent the last few months of my war with them in Elmshorn. But we weren't doing anything very much there, bar just casual training.
So when were you demobbed?
I was demobbed in June 1946.
And was that the end of the army for you?
That was the end of the army for me, yes.
How do you feel now about having served with the Royal Artillery in the Second World War?
Looking back, I can honestly say it did me the world of good. I mean, when the war was on, no one wanted to be in a war. But the comradeship and the friends I made, who I've kept in touch with ever since, well, most of them are gone now, but I've kept in touch with my real good mates, and my CO, Eric Rankin, I keep in regular touch with him. He's visited me. We went to Arnhem together this year. We went to Hengelo together this year. We were guests of the corporation at Hengelo for their millennium celebrations. Eric and his wife both came with Maureen, my wife, and myself. And I went to the reunion of the airborne at Arnhem with Douglas Goddard and his wife, and there's a real comradeship between the old members of the regiment, and it is very, very, very heartening. I think it made a man of me. Some years ago, probably 10 years ago, I was looking through all my papers at such like, and I found the secret fire plans for the big fire plan that was being fired on Lark Hill, the first time that typhoons were going to be called in cooperation with the artillery on targets. And we did this huge fire plan up there. And I had these fire plans. They were all marked top secret. But they were in as new condition. I must have brought them home at the time. And I got in contact with the CO at Lark Hill, and asked him if they would be any good for his museum. And he was thrilled to bits and invited me up there as his guest for the day. And I went to Lark Hill and was their guest for the day. And I went round, I saw all the new weapons and demonstrations of new weapons. And he said, would I like to go out and do a laser shoot on the range? And I said, I'd love to. So I went out on the range and I was instructed how to do this laser shoot, which was so easy. And they had a command post, a mobile command post, during my visit up there. And I said to the officer who was taking me around, what happens if your command post is hit with a shell then? And he said, oh, well, he said, we're absolutely stuck. I said, do they know how to do it on paper like we used to do it? And he said, no. No way, he said, they're all trained on the computers and the technology of today. Whereas we used to get into an OP, get out our pad and draw our panorama, marking all the prominent positions, zero them in on with one gun, number them as targets, which all took 10 minutes, quarter of an hour. And we did this each time we got into a new OP. So So we registered the whole panorama in front of us. And it amazed me, the new technology, whereas I've just pointed the laser at the target I wanted. I didn't even have to give a map reading. It came up and I just pressed a button and down came the shells, and that was it, right on target. Whereas we would have to zero a gun around. I was on Lark Hill once. We were doing a shoot, and the CRA came up to me, and he said, Bombardier, he said, you see that telegraph post on the horizon there? He said, do you think you're accurate enough to destroy it? I said, yes, sir. And carry on then. So I worked out this map spotting and called for 5 rounds of gunfire on it. Down came the shells all around the lamppost, because when they cleared, the lamppost was still, the telegraph post was still standing. And the CRA gave me a hell of a rocket for being so stupid to think I could destroy a telegraph post at such a range. But just one of those instances.
So you mean with the laser shoots, if the computer goes down, they've got no fallback position?
They've got nothing, no. I mean, we really needed a school satchel to carry our books in. We had range tables. We used umpteen different books for working out targets, because we had to work out trajectories and wind speeds, and if there were hills, the height we had to use and to get over the range, and whether we were using we used at times close proximity fuses in the shells, which when they went over woods, they would explode over the woods. So if there were dug-in troops in the woods, they would shatter the shrapnel down into the woods and such things as that. But it was all worked out on slide rule and range tables and such like, and it was quite a long job.